So welcome to Podcast Pell Droid. My name is Russell, and who else am I with tonight?
Gareth is here with you.
Via Skype.
Leon, good evening.
News on this book of yours.
I think you know about as much as me, actually, from the messages this afternoon. Hopefully, there will be some copies available for the 5th of December at the London Welsh Centre in King's Cross, doing a bit of an evening with Ellis James, and then coming to South Wales for the weekend after that. On the Saturday the 9th, hopefully there'll be lots of copies available at Swansea City at the club shop, because Brian's going to be there at midday to do some signings. And then in the evening, I think we're going to do something at Chapter.
Too many hopefullys in that then, what you just said, then would be ideal. But I didn't realise quite how much of this goes down to the wire with publishers and printing and everything else. But yeah, the club shop in the afternoon and then Chapter in the evening. And just people come along. We'll probably have some signed copies left, won't we, by the time the evening comes around?
Oh, just get Brian to sign as many as he can in the time we have him available, Swansea. So get a lot of signed copies to bring to Cardiff as well. It's all going down to the wire, but it's looking good. The plate section, the photo section was only just finished the other day. It took a fair bit of work. In the end, it's come out pretty well, I think. Some really good photos in there, and I think it should be a nice looking book, at least. I don't know how it's going to read, but it should look good.
St. David's Press, they're the publishers.
Yeah, so you should mention them, yeah. You can pre-order the book now, St. David's Press, or from Amazon, but it's probably going to be a little bit later than they say on the website. I think it says 30th of November, but it's going to be probably something like the 8th or 9th of December when books are sent out, I'd have thought.
Still in time for Santa, isn't it?
Hopefully. Getting right on those Christmas lists.
If Brian gets a bit of sort of writer's cramp as he's signing, I'll sign a couple on his behalf as well, okay? Just here. I mean, I'll edit that out, but just between you and me, yeah?
Just sign it anyway, because your contribution to one section.
the theme of this has been arranging chapters. Okay, I wonder whether Brian Flynn's name might come up a little bit, actually, because we're going to briefly look back at the two friendly games, the France and the Panama games. We've never really have a chance to get around the mic for those, what with work and other things. And then we're going to obviously look at who some of the runners and riders are to replace Chris Coleman, because then that was the other... gone to Sunderland, which I think surprised a few people.
I think I'm surprised how much it surprised a few people. With the best will in the world, his stock was lower than it would have been straight after the Euros. I think when jobs like Leicester and certainly Everton have come up already, he was nowhere near really a candidate for those. I don't know about maybe West Brom, had he held out another week or so, but again, I doubt it. So what's he looking at? He's looking at going abroad, and I know he's talked about that, or he's looking at doing something with a decent championship club. And I know they're a bit of a basket case, but if you can meet a guy who sort of turns them around, and this season really it's only about saving them and keeping them in the championship, you know, it's a massive club. You could be, you know, he could make himself a hero at that club. His managerial stock could rocket if he can do something there. And I know it's a big if at a club like Sunderland, but I'm not that surprised that he would have been tempted to take on a big club in a difficult position, because, you know, it's either that or maybe a slightly more middling club, a bit better off in the Championship, but the bigger job offers weren't going to be there.
I know, and they won yesterday, only the second one of the season, two late goals, and you can see away from home against a relegation rival at Burton, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah.
And he looked pumped at the end. Yeah. I was really pleased for him, but
absolutely.
I mean, I couldn't help think it was a bit like watching your ex move on while you're still moping around, listening to Portishead or something. But yeah, no, I'm pleased for him, because that's a tough job. Was it Gus Poyet said? He said there's a cancer at the heart of that club, which, you know, that is saying something.
It's how easy or difficult it is for him to get shot of a load of those players. They must still have too many players on too much money, happy to sit it out. Mm. He needs to find a way to get shot of them. And then it's up to him to kind of bring in some decent names who'll do it at that level. That's what always saves clubs in that position, who kind of shoot down and then are looking in trouble again. They need to offload all the kind of prima donnas from the they would have picked up in January, the season they were trying to stay in the Premier League, and get players who are right for that kind of championship dogfight.
I think he might do all right there as well. You know, I've seen a few cynical comments saying, well, there's one in particular, Jonathan Wilson, who's a famous Guardian journalist, who's a Sunderland fan, saying, oh great, we've just appointed the guy who was recently tactically outwitted by the guy that we sacked a year ago, meaning Martin O'Neill. That's a sarcastic comment about whether that was progress or not. But I just think, like, he's a really positive guy. Okay, we failed to qualify for the World Cup, but, you know, it was 18 months ago or so, or 20 months, that we had this, like, huge success in reaching the European Championship semi-final. I think he's still in a positive mindset, and he's probably, that kind of positivity is probably what Sunderland need. And, you know, let's face it, we were struggling in the first year or so, the first 2 years he had the job with Wales. We were kind of struggling for results big time, but you could certainly say we were underachieving with the players that we had, but you know managed to turn that around eventually. I think he'll feel confident that he could do the same at Sunderland. Yeah, I agree with Gaz. I wasn't that surprised, really. I was a bit surprised at how surprised people were as well. It's a big club. They'll pay well, they get good crowds, and yeah, I don't think he was gonna be offered the Leicester or Everton jobs ever, so maybe a decent move for all parties. And I know people feel, Wales fans feel a bit sort of almost jilted that he's gone and gone to a club which on the surface doesn't seem to be in a great place, but I honestly think that as brilliant a job as he did with Wales, if his heart wasn't in it anymore and he wanted to go back to the day-to-day business of club management, then it's the right decision for everyone that he moves on. And that's not to say that he's not a legend and the best manager we've ever had, and he just did amazing things and gave us so many incredible memories, but perhaps it was the right time.
I think we get a little bit caught up in forgetting that he'd always planned to go after this campaign. That had been almost set, and okay, we hoped it would be after a World Cup, but okay, in the sort of, I don't know, grief for want of a better word of us not getting past Ireland and this hope that he would stay, and maybe a little bit of it was to do with, you know, maybe the level of jobs that he might have been in line for a year earlier weren't there. I don't know. But I think with hindsight now, he always wanted to move on. He wanted to get back into club management. And, you know, and I think from our point of view, Leon's possibly right. Maybe it is time for someone who can bring a couple of fresh ideas in. And, you know, we don't necessarily have to sit around mourning his departure. There are some interesting options, and you know, hopefully it works out for everybody. I don't see why it shouldn't.
We took a little bit of flack on Twitter for not perhaps being as gushing in our praise of the rain. But I mean, I'm inclined to agree with you, Leon. I think that the noises hadn't been positive for a while in terms of how discussions were going or weren't going. You know, he's putting a few conditions to the FAW, by all accounts, which I heard most of them, if not all of them, they agreed to. So it does beg the question whether it just came down to money or whatever it was. Like you say, if the heart's not in it, then it's probably best for everybody to move on. And I'm just not sure that I don't think we tactically evolved quickly enough through the end of that campaign. And ultimately, it was a failure. And I think not being disappointed in him going is not the same as wanting him to go. And it was just a bit more of a pragmatism, certainly on my part. If he stayed, great. Wouldn't have had any problem with him staying whatsoever. Yeah. But likewise, if the time is right for both parties to move on, then actually do it quickly. Don't let it get unseemly or get played out in public. Let's be honest, has happened a few times in the past with us. And actually, you talk about us being jilted. I think the timing is right in some respects, because we've got no games coming up. We can see who maybe comes available in the next sort of month or 6 weeks. And we don't do anything on the rebound then. You know, by going for Pulis, because we've got two qualifiers coming up and we need somebody in. So I think on that basis, I think the transition, to be fair, I think it's been handled well, as it possibly could be.
That's how we feel now about Coleman leaving, and how gushing people may or may not be about the rain, are two different issues. I'm perfectly willing to gush if that's what people want. He provided the best 2 years I've ever had watching Wales, and I would always be incredibly grateful for that. That was a fantastic job. But, like you say, things changed a little bit. We weren't great this campaign, and it did start to feel a little bit like the things Coleman was really good at getting us to do, he'd done, and what we needed next was new sort of attacking ideas and attacking threats, better ways to utilise some of our attacking players. And it's not just that we didn't do it in the last campaign, It's that by the end of the campaign, I couldn't really see that we were about to do it in two games, three games time at the start of the next campaign either. So, you know, it's not that I'm glad he's gone, like you say. It's that I can see that it will still work out for us that he has gone. And you know, we can still look back on the time he was there and think of that as a great period. And his legacy is never now going to be tarnished.
I think back to the total mess of the situation after we failed to qualify for the Euros in 2004, when it was completely obvious after that the Russia game that Mark Hughes had lost heart. He put all his eggs in this particular basket of qualifying for Euro 2004, and he was just sounding completely crestfallen when we didn't do it. And so you think, okay, right, fine, yeah, you did well for a bit, but now it's time to go. You should have gone right then. Next thing, we see the draw for the World Cup and we get England in the group, and he decides, oh, I quite fancy playing England. I'm going to stay on. He stayed on for completely the wrong reasons. We had a terrible start to the next group with the draws against Azerbaijan and Northern Ireland, and then the Blackburn was sniffing around. He decided, oh, actually, I'd quite like to go and manage in the Premier League. He took that job, and the FAW, because they didn't have any sort of contingency plan in place, allowed him to come back and sort of part-time manage the team in the games against England and Poland. It was an absolute mess. And that set us back, I think. It ruined that campaign for starters. So you can see, obviously, Toshak had to come in and do a lot of rebuilding anyway. But to go within weeks of failing to qualify for a tournament when your heart's not in it is a lot better than doing what Hughes did back in 2003-2004.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, that was an absolute mess. Yeah, and as I said, I think it's been managed far, far better. I think, with all due respect, the FAW are a completely different beast these days in terms of sort of professionalism and how they manage the press and things like that. And I you know, there's just no comparison between the current and the old organisation. They still got to get the appointment of the successor correct, mind, and do that, make a decent fist of that. But yeah,
that's an interesting one for Jules, actually, for me, because we've all sort of sat around and given the FAW a lot of praise for modernising, and since they've kind of done that in the last few years, they haven't had to go out and appoint a new manager. And I just wonder if we're going to see something different this time in terms of the way they go about things. I just don't know, like, who makes these decisions and how qualified are these people to make these decisions anyway. And I'm not saying that they've necessarily made bad decisions, because I think the last couple of appointments have been very good. It's not like many of the fans wanted Coleman, but they kind of stuck their neck out and saw that, you know, he could possibly be a good choice. I was listening to a radio interview with Jimmy Armfield a little while back, and he was asked by the FA, the English FA, to consult on who should be their manager back in the 90s. And he was had a big role in appointing Terry Venables and Glenn Hoddle to the role. And I mean, this is a guy who, you know, played 40 odd times for England and was part of their World Cup squad in 66. I know Ray Houghton has a role with the Republic of Ireland in recruiting new managers. He was one, champion Martin O'Neill. I just wonder, like, would the FAW be tempted to maybe go out and ask, you know, a respected former player or someone who's been involved in Welsh football? Because it just seems to me we're asking people who've not actually been involved in football in a professional capacity to make a decision that I'm not sure they're qualified for.
Yeah, that's a good point. My worry is some of the Welsh ex-pros, when I've heard them in the media this last week, have come up with some ridiculous suggestions. that's my worry.
Or they're fancy it themselves.
I think Robbie Savage probably takes first prize. I think did he suggest Hartson and Saunders? I can't remember. I'm not sure if it was Hartson or Saunders, or whether it was a double team of Hartson and Saunders. It depends who.
Which ex-player, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, they've got plenty of time. We'll come back to this point. They've got plenty of time to canvass a range of opinions, I suppose. Yeah. And I suppose probably for the first time in a long, long time, we're the most attractive proposition than we've ever been. Mm. You know, maybe that changes things a little bit as well. I don't know.
Well, you'd hope so. But in the kind of immediate discussion, speculation, media coverage of it, it's not providing a wealth of suggestions of people who are experienced in most cases. I don't know what you guys think. I haven't yet heard the name of a candidate spoken and thought, oh, yeah, yeah, good idea. Yeah, good experience, taking the right direction, ticks all the boxes. There's big question marks over everyone who's being spoken about.
One of the bookies had Harry Redknapp on the shortlist. So you're not counting bookies then?
You can't sign players though at international level. Can you? Does Harry Redknapp know that?
No. Driving in and out of the Vale with the car window wound down. He's probably his scene though. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Once he realised Nico Cranchard's not Welsh, he'd have no interest, would he?
Yeah, yeah.
Jermaine Defoe.
Yeah. Try to call up Di Bentley. I claim that he's responsible for Gareth Bale's subsequent fame and fortune and ability and success.
There's an interesting bit about that in a forthcoming book coming out on St David's Press, by the way.
Oh, really? Okay, look forward to that.
Yeah.
They may or may not have some inconsistent Brian Flynn autographs in the front cover. None of them kind of really put lead in my pencil, but people then sort of throw the gauntlet down on social media. Well, who you have then? It's just, well, I'm actually more interested in going through the criteria.
Mm.
Yeah? It's kind of like, well, who do you just pick a name and then fit them to the job rather than go, okay, what's the criteria? Where for some people, it has to be a Welsh person. I think preferably, but I'm not going to die on that cause on this particular issue. Clearly, they have to agree to continue to pick Chris Gunter.
Yeah.
So if Claudio Ranieri's interested or Ancelotti, they may have some game plan that involves, you know, Jazz Richards or something, and I'm sorry, that's just not going to work. That's not going to get in the job. They have to have experience of international football. You know, you take someone like Ranieri, he was an utter disaster with Greece.
Yeah.
So I don't know, is he interested in rehabilitating himself on that scene or taking up that challenge again? I think there could be some interesting out of left field choices. And I think what's interesting is people kind of go, oh, must be Welsh. Well, last time round, Lars Lagerbäck had a massive backing because he seemed a bit of a novelty and has got a decent track record and subsequently continues to.
And given the position we were in there, he would have possibly been ideal, who knows. But
so there's always inconsistencies. So that's the point I'm trying to make. There's always inconsistencies in this debate.
If you take Tony Pulis, who's I don't think a popular choice amongst Welsh fans, but many of the same Welsh fans who are likely to insist it should be a Welsh person, one of the arguments those sort of same sort of people were putting forward against him was, well, yeah, but if you think about his style of football and this, that and the other, we wouldn't even consider him if he wasn't Welsh. I said, well, A, that's contradictory. B, you could apply that to anyone. I think Tony Pulis would be more credible candidate as a non-Welshman than Bellamy or Giggs if they weren't Welsh. They're almost wholly linked with a job because they're Welsh.
The other observation then was that given, and again, wish him every success, but the revolving door at Sunderland means that Coleman could conceivably be available for the start of the next campaign, possibly even the China Cup anyway. So you could even just see this, he's just on secondment.
Yeah.
He's taken a sabbatical in the northeast.
Interesting one this week is that Ossian Roberts said he would like the job, and Rich tweeted me straight afterwards to say, oh, this changes things for him. And we've talked about it before, and your worry in particular, Russ, that it leaves a huge gap as technical director if he does become the Wales team manager. But it's an interesting proposition. I think he said something like, as qualified as anyone possibly can be in terms of international experience for someone who hasn't actually been an international manager. He's Welsh, he knows all the players. The players all seem to like him, respect him. He knows the game inside out. He's respected in the game. People like Thierry Henry and Desailly have done their coaching badges with him. I wonder, he has to be considered a very credible candidate.
I'd agree with that. I think when I saw that article you're talking about on the BBC website, and when he came out and said those things, okay, it does bring the same sort of handful of questions that any candidate brings. But it was the first time I'd heard a report, an article about a prospective candidate. I thought, oh, yeah, that could be interesting. I could get on board with that. That might be a way of taking us as forward. It's a nice combination of someone who really knows the setup, who he himself said in those comments, he has an idea of where we need to go next, the things we need to do to kick on. And it could be a way of providing that general continuity, but something fresh without massive upheaval, someone the players are going to like and respond to, you would imagine.
Not upheaval for the senior squad.
It then
leaves a vacancy. You've then got to replace more or less the architect of the entire sort of structure, the technical structure of basically football in Wales. Arguably, that's then... No, I think actually pound for pound, that's probably an even more important appointment then, because the job isn't finished.
No.
Really promising, you know, in that Panama game and the France game, to see the likes of Ampadu and Woburn and Brooks and those sorts of, you know, and others coming through the system, and to show that there's that pathway, and that's good. But we haven't got tons of players coming through. The professional playing base is still far too small.
But if you can make that appointment as well a good appointment, you can only presume that Austin Roberts in the overall manager's job would see part as linking very, very closely with whoever replaces him in his old role.
I think the name that's been talked about the rest of it is Carl Darlington.
Yeah.
Assistant to Dean Keats at the moment, Wrexham. And so we're doing well, and we're well organised this season, and part of that is down to him. So I'd be kind of sad to see him go, in a way. But I mean, it would be a massive promotion for him to become the technical director at the FAW. Kind of seen as sort of... Ossian's prodigy, really, in a way. I mean, he's still pretty young, but hugely respected and assistant at TNS for a few years when they were just winning everything, winning like every game, every season virtually. He's a credible candidate as Ossian's replacement if Ossian does get the manager's job.
I think that's what's quite appealing about Ossian as a candidate. In 2 minutes conversation about it, we can envisage a way of the structure changing and people moving into different roles that offers a kind of obvious path forward, that maybe maintains the things we're doing well but seeks to build on them. Anyone else, Bellamy, Poulis, Giggs, whoever, we don't really know what they're going to bring. We don't really know what their sort of the vision is for taking the team forward. We don't really know how they'd work alongside the age groups and the wider structure of the setup. So, I don't know, there's something very appealing about protecting what we've got. And I'm sure whoever they appoint, they'll have a mind on that, but I don't know.
How they prepare the senior squad and who they pick and tactics and stuff like that, you have to sort of let the person who gets the job, you know, decide all of that. But I'd like to think the FAW will say, well, we're making an appointment. There's someone who is prepared to really not dismantle that structure, the technical side of things, at all. I mean, I suppose someone could sort of want to change it because they want to... They'll assume that they're making an improvement, or they're intending to make an improvement. And I suppose if it's about changing things for the better, then, you know, it sort of stands to reason. But I just suppose it's that uncertainty that the conveyor belt could start drying up. Because after Hughes's reign, we realised that it was actually very, very little underneath that senior team coming through at all. Well, that's completely different now. I just wonder whether within the game, whether a lot of the candidates probably know that the system is relatively robust at the age grade levels, the intermediate levels. And again, does that make that a bit more of an attractive proposition? Interesting observation. He started his reign and he finished it against CONCACAF opposition.
You just wanted to say CONCACAF again, didn't you?
Yeah. You got me on that one. Although, actually, Wiki lists the Costa Rica game as his first, but isn't that technically... He wasn't technically in charge for that. Austin Roberts picked the team and everything. And
true.
So I'm not sure Wiki's correct.
He's number one in the list of our managers who've got to European Championship semi-finals.
Exactly. To get us over the line, that's the thing. It was, you know, to be there, to be in a tournament, which is why he surely goes down as Wales' greatest ever manager.
Yeah, absolutely. And peaked at 8th in the world rankings under him.
That's just completely unprecedented. I think our highest before Coleman might have been 27th or something.
Yeah.
Under Yorath.
Yeah, just as Yorath was finishing, wasn't it, I think. Do we need to critique some of these other candidates?
The process is interesting to me. Like, if there's interviews, and let's say the candidates we talked about all go to interview, and we've got, like, Ossian Roberts and Bellamy and Giggs and Pulis go for an interview, don't see why, at that point, Giggs would be the one to get the job, considering he's been for interviews before with clubs. Once they've talked to him, they've decided, no, this guy isn't for us. So, like, what could, like, Giggs do in the interview procedure differently to get that job? Or is it just they would do that as a kind of process because they want to make it look like they're doing an interview process, whereas really they just want to give the job to Giggs because he's a big name That's an interesting thing for me.
No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, we were talking earlier about what kind of sort of animal the FAW is now. It would be a real regression to the bad old days if we, you know, if we came out of this with a manager we thought they'd chosen just because he's Ryan Giggs. And I agree with you, Leon. That he, above all the other candidates, is someone with massive question marks over him. He's had a period briefly under two fairly disastrous Manchester United managers. Mourinho didn't want to keep him on. He hasn't seemingly got anywhere near the jobs he's applied for. Reports of him seem to suggest that he's maybe holding out to get parachuted into a big job, which objectively you might think he's not really entitled to expect. I don't see what he has to offer other than being Ryan Giggs. And as before, you know, some Welsh fans, I'm not necessarily amongst them, but some Welsh fans want to throw into the list of considerations that he never used to turn up for friendlies. I would say he's the weakest of the names that are shortlisted.
Don't see anywhere near it, to be honest. And I think there's an irony that he's, if he did get it, his first games would be in the China Cup, which he wouldn't have got out of bed for, let's be honest, as a player. I know that sounds a bit sarcastic, but no, that is correct.
Yeah.
He'd have gone nowhere near that tournament.
It is true. I wouldn't care about that, though, if he had some kind of coaching pedigree that I could point to and say, yeah, well, he's achieved this, or he's doing that, or he's this, that club, or that club has seen something in him. But there's none of that. You know, we have no evidence on which to base the idea that he'll be a successful manager.
It's a Vietnamese football academy.
Well, yeah. Apart from that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be kicking myself now when Vietnam make their first World Cup in 4 years' time and get out of groups.
Yeah.
You did an interview with the BBC, didn't you, about Giggs, Russ?
Yeah, I think I trotted all this out then as well. None of this is just rehashing this. I don't see him as a credible candidate.
No.
I just don't, other than he's marketable. But how much more marketing do we need to do of this team at the minute? I mean, it's like, you know, its profile is the highest it's ever been, frankly.
Surely as well, the marketing thing is based around players. I've never got this thing about a marketable manager. I mean, was Alex Ferguson a marketable manager at Manchester United? He was, you know, he didn't talk to the BBC for about 10 years, did he? Like the players are what's marketable. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo is marketable, or Van Nistelrooy, or, you know, Beckham, especially Beckham. Bale is marketable. Joe Allen is marketable. Aaron Ramsey is marketable. These players are like the heroes to kids in Wales. We don't need a marketable manager.
That's our most successful. We weren't using Chris Coleman as a big part of our marketing of the team. Okay, the idea of the setup and the players and him all together and together stronger and all of that. We didn't have big billboards in the Cardiff City Stadium with Chris Coleman. It's the players, like Leon said. Yeah. Of course it is. In international football especially, because it's not the same sort of continuum as a regular continuous club football, it's the moments that are marketable. It's the success you have and the goals that go in that qualify you, or those sort of moments in a tournament. If we think about the iconic images, yeah, Coleman's involved in some of them where he's getting swamped by all the players around the bench. But that's not about Chris Coleman's appointment and his kind of managerial role. That's just what comes from having a successful manager who takes the team forward. That's what we need to think about when we're appointing. And Giggs, to me, on the face of it, seems the least likely to provide that.
So we're crossing Giggs off the list then.
I would say so.
Yeah, and I'd cross Hughes off. I've seen Hughes mentioned a few times as well, as if he wants to sort of come back and finish the job he started. I'm just thinking, well, no, he made a Horlicks of it the first time round when he had every bit as much talent available to him offensive-wise, and he just didn't seem interested in using it. So, no thanks.
Mark Hughes, as one of the few Premier League managers who's relatively secure long-term job, I can't imagine for a minute he's looking, do you know what I want to do now is take a massive pay cut. That's just kind of people making up stories. There's no legs in that at all.
No. I think the one with Bellamy is interesting in that there's some really good noises coming out of Cardiff City about the work he's doing with the sort of the academy and the youth setup there. But there's this tension with him in that surely he's being groomed to replace Warnock.
Mm.
When Warnock will move upstairs, maybe in some capacity, or, you know, retire or whatever, Bellamy takes the reins, which, I don't know, you know, could be a year or two time. I mean, Warnock could probably want a final crack at the Premier League if Cardiff do go up this year, and they're playing really, really well. And Bellamy takes over. And that's a really difficult choice for Bellamy, if that's an accurate interpretation of the situation.
Right. I mean, it's speculative, but you're right. It's a possibility. But if true, what that does do is actually just reinforce the idea that he's a more credible candidate. Because if Cardiff City see him as a potential future manager, Dennett suggests that he's already got something about him, ideas and vision that might make him a good candidate. You know, for all that Mark Hughes hasn't come out of this conversation very well so far, both he and Gary Speed were novice managers who cut their teeth with Wales. And okay, I'm not saying that's necessarily the future for us again, but looking at the list of candidates, it may well be this time. So it may, you know, it may as well be someone who's looking like they might have a long future in later club management. Someone who, like you say, is doing well with the youngsters at Cardiff City. Someone who's experience of working with the age groups at Wales as well. And it's funny, I was kind of listening to another podcast, which is a kind of English podcast. So, you know, without, I suppose, the same knowledge of Welsh football and footballers and the setup. And they were making quite a bit of a joke of Craig Bellamy being one of the contenders because they will associate not much more really than his sort of volatile character shooting his mouth off from time to time. And to be fair, as I was into that, I thought, oh yeah, that's a consideration we shouldn't completely forget. But he came across well, didn't he, on TV when he sort of was kind of making noises about wanting the job. He does seem to have a different manner now as a coach and an older person in the game. And, you know, I think we could be reassured through discussions that lead up to any appointment that, you know, he's got the head and the temperament for it.
There's something methodical about him which runs counter and almost counterintuitive to, like you say, his reputation as being, you know, a bit of a firebrand and a bit temperamental and unpredictable and volatile, and there'd probably be some concerns within the FAW if he's booking to take them all off on the golf course for an afternoon. But, you know, it's
or bring back Dutch Ray.
But he'd have seen firsthand how Hughes went straight from being a player into it. Bellamy hasn't quite done that, potentially. There's a considerable sort of lobby that still refers to Hughes's reign as a success. Mm. And we had a purple patch, but that purple patch took a while to come along and it fizzled out really quickly. Yeah. And I wonder whether Bellamy would subscribe to that then. Because he then, how many times did he sign for Hughes? Man City, Blackburn, was it just or twice? The point I'm trying to make is he'd have seen a close hand back transition and think it's doable then, going straight into the national job with your first managerial role.
Listen to the other Welsh football podcast. They had Gavin and Roberts talking, and they were discussing the point about whether he's possibly not burned bridges, but whether antagonised enough members of the current squad at the tail end of his playing days. And I thought it was interesting to hear Ewan Roberts making that case, that is he going to have the respect of people that he might have said cutting things to as a player while still in a Welsh shirt? And Danny Gabbardon, the player who will have been around as a player in some of those dressing rooms, dismissed that and didn't seem to see it as an issue. So those arguments associated with his temperament, the way he's rubbed people up the wrong way in the past, they all seem to be obstacles that could be overcome without too much of a stretch.
Surely
it doesn't concern me. When he's nearly 40 now, he's not going to go around attacking people with a golf club now, is he? I can't see it. You know,
I don't think
mindset as a player, as a young player.
I agree.
Bellamy talks well. He understands the game. Rich on the previous podcast was saying that his understanding was, and I don't know where Rich got this from, but his understanding was that Bellamy is actually in touch and very friendly with the likes of Bale and Ramsey. And I think him and Ramsey go back quite a way, actually. And Joe Allen, people like that, used to talk positively in the past about Joe Allen. This was before, like, Joe Allen became a real kind of star player for us. He said something like, what Wales needs is more players like Joe Allen. And this is like 7-8 years ago or something. I don't really have those concerns about his temperament.
No, I agree. I'm not massively concerned. I think more for argument's sake, just those would be the things that might be levelled at Bellamy if we wanted to sort of try and look at the possible dangers of his appointment. And I wasn't trying to suggest it's anything about fights in nightclubs or attacking people with golf clubs. It's more, much kind of smaller scale than that. He has yet to have that experience of very high pressure coaching and management. If things are going badly, if we have a tough run of games, his default at times as a player would be to be quite direct and cutting and harsh and occasionally to fall out with people. the signs are that as he matures, that, you know, he has got a different approach and different ways of doing things, but that hasn't been tested at a at a higher level. That just comes back to the experience. But, you know, there's a fairly good chance we're going to have to appoint someone of pretty limited experience.
I agree, Leon. I don't think he's, you know, he's going to be going around with golf clubs attacking people. I think he's probably going to use something much subtler these days. Yeah, snooker ball in a sock or something. Just you can conceal that a lot easier than a golf club, of course.
He's matured.
Yeah, just get someone else to do it.
Good.
Until the story about Oshin Roberts throwing his hat in the ring came out, I was leaning towards Bellamy over anyone else's side. I did mention.
But Roberts a week earlier also said something about Ryan Giggs. So I wonder whether this is a, don't forget I'm around. The players all came out and said they really, really wanted Coleman to stay.
Yeah.
And like really gushingly. I mean, really gushingly. And I think it was quite telling that that had come out even before, even just a couple of hours after losing to Ireland. There was some statement in the press around them wanting to stay. You know, Bale was in the ground as well at night, obviously. And I can understand the motivation behind that. They all said that they wanted Brian Flynn to stay when he had the caretaker. They'd all said they'd have been happy with Ray Verheyen. The current players say this, and I just wonder whether all they're interested in is whoever it is going to come in going to pick me.
Yeah.
And they want to be interested in, you know, the culture and the atmosphere around the camp, and people have always said that under Speed and Coleman it was a lot better than it was under Toshack.
And we've bought into that as fans and celebrated in our discussion. So I think it'd be wrong of us not now to see something at least a bit genuine in the way they champion Coleman staying on. But I think, as we said earlier, I wonder if that was always a bit false, that he, with hindsight, he wasn't going to stay on. I think that became much more of a credible discussion than actually it ever really should have been.
Yeah.
Do we have to talk about Tony Pulis now then?
We touched on him earlier, didn't you guys? Like, he's available. So the notion that we'd have to buy him out of the remainder of his contract or whatever he was on would really not appeal, because we haven't got money to throw around in those sorts of ways. But I would imagine there's probably a constituency within the FAW council or whatever the structures are who probably quite like him. When I say like him, I mean rate him. I'm not sure anyone really likes Tony Pulis, but
I'm not as instantly dismissive of him as a lot of people have been. It's just the problem is that of all the kind of managers of his type, he's tactically rigid, even beyond someone like Allardyce or Hodgson or other comparable people. And that's not going to be, I can't see any way that's going to be right for our group of players. Because if it wasn't for that, he ticks a lot of boxes. He's only one of the candidates with any kind of serious managerial experience. He's achieved relative success with limited groups of players on more than one occasion. He's Welsh. He seems to be, from what people in the game say, good man manager, good motivator of players. But that style is not going to be right for our side. It's not going to do what we need to do, which is start to think and start to be a bit different in the way we utilise Ramsey and Bale. It's not going to be right for thinking how do talented young players like Brooks and Woodburn kind of evolve their way into the team. So I haven't wanted to kind of dismiss him as quickly as some, because if there were any possibility that he was ever going to be a bit more tactically flexible, then he might be someone to think about. I guess I just can't see it, and I'm one of the ones who's least damning of him. So,
if you read the Numbers Game book, it really is hard to warm to Pulis on a number of levels. And people talk about tactics, about it being long ball, and it fundamentally misses the point. Yeah. It's about having the ball out of play for as long as is feasible and practicable is actually a core element of his approach, which just is ridiculous when you have players who can look after the ball and caress the ball and treat the ball so kindly and warmly, like Joe Allen or Ben Woodburn. I mean, Sam Vokes would probably be happy with him, but I mean, Vokes kind of just going up, winning the knockdowns and putting the ball out for a throw. And I mean, who has got a long throw? I mean, Bale. Oh God, Bale's got a long throw.
That's how
he tries to light. No, I'm
from left back, probably.
Yeah, no, obviously, because it's further for him to run at the pace at the pitch, wasn't it? It's the ridiculous. Oh, anyway,
do you mean he could be Wales's Chris Brunt?
The Welsh Chris Brunt.
What is this book, The Numbers Game? Who wrote it?
The Numbers Game is Why Everything You Know About Football Is Wrong, and it's by Chris Anderson and David Salley. And one is English, the other's American. But they both have this interest in sort of statistics and maths, and they just talk through some of the received wisdoms and other things around the game and test some of these, but it's with like a massive, massive amount of data, isn't it, that they crunch. It does stack up.
It's brilliant and interesting stuff in there. It's a really good read.
I'm not selling it, I recognise that, but it is a lot about numbers. I mean, that's what it says in the title. But it's stuff around, you know, yellow cards and red cards. And
if you're the sort of person who would spend your time listening to this podcast, you're the sort of
person who would probably like actually, it. Yeah. It dissects Tony Pulis in quite some detail. He was at Stoke, and I don't imagine he's changed his approach hugely at West Brom. But he's never been relegated, and I suppose, you know, that has a degree of cachet in the game, league game. But that's just not relevant when it comes to appointing an international coach.
I agree with what Gaz was saying before about him actually ticking a lot of boxes. I just don't see him as an international manager. I just can't picture it, really. He's been really successful as a club manager, and that's what he does. He gets teams to play ugly and hard to beat. They're hard to relegate, and he's been absolutely incredibly successful at in that respect. So if you look at the clubs he's been at, to have never been relegated in 20 plus years as a club manager, it's really something. You know, you've got to sort of take your hat off to him for that. But is he an international manager? Not for me.
I slightly disagree, in a sense that he could be a type of international manager. I have no doubt he could probably achieve with a team of a certain type what Martin O'Neill, for example, has been doing recently with the Republic of Ireland. He could probably take a team like that, get them playing some really rubbish football and qualify for a World Cup, which they go out of in the group stages. But that's not going to get what we want to get out of our group of players. And it's not the right ambition for where we are. Looking to nick games 1-0 and, you know, getting men behind the ball and all the other things Russ was just talking about tactically, it's not right for us as at the moment. And it probably never would be if we've got any kind of ambition to see the development of our national football team in terms of, you know, longer periods of time. But if what any country wanted was, well, hey, we've struggled for ages, let's become really resilient and hard to beat and see if we can sneak into a tournament, I imagine he's the sort of manager who could probably do that.
Actually, he probably would be good with a country like Norway, say, a country with like really tall players. He'd probably do really well there.
Yeah.
Not with Ben Woodburn and Joe Allen, though. Probably not, no.
Yeah, we're not a country with tall players. Any other candidates come to mind?
I mean, they're the only ones who've been offered up with any kind of serious expectation, I think. Do we think any of the other names that have been chucked here and there, Lagerbäck and Thierry Henry, are they realistically in the mix?
If you're going to say Henry, well, you may as well chuck in Vieira, Desailly. It's just because Henry was pictured in a FAW shell suit.
Yeah.
That is all that is, and because he's maybe sort of said something kind about us when asked, as if he was going to be negative. So if you're going to put Henry, then you have to chuck all of those other names of coaches that have come and done their badges here. Peter Crouch, then. There's another one for you. Yeah. Chuck him in.
And again, most of them don't have any serious managerial experience either. Thierry Henry's kind of glamorous and stylish, great footballer, Frenchman. He'd look the part, but it's no different to the Ryan Giggs sort of marketable argument, really, is it?
He would, until he has to do one of his road shows and he's got to go to Kevin Druids or Port Talbot Town.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Kevin Maurer or Port Talbot, but I just can't see him. And you said the same about Giggs on Twitter, Leon, and I agreed. I don't see them doing that part of the game. But then if they're prepared to...
I think Giggs does get an interview. I'd love to sort of be a fly on the wall when the FAW kind of say to him, so how do you feel about spending your next Tuesday night going to the clubhouse at Clanroos United to them, sort of thing? You know, you can just imagine like Giggs going ashen-faced to this idea. Maybe I'm unfair there. And it is a consideration as well, because to be more serious, I think one of the really good things that Jonathan Ford at the FAW has done is he's turned that job into, and he stated this, the manager of football in Wales rather than just the manager of the Welsh national football team. And that's how he sees it. So those things, those going out to Haverford West, going up to Snowdonia on a Tuesday night, going to Newtown to Aberystwyth. For me, it's been great. It's been a really big thing in sort of creating this connection between the team and the Welsh public. I don't think it's just like a trivial thing. I think it's really important. So whoever comes in, I think, should be prepared to go out there and meet people across Wales. I think that needs to carry on.
That's more likely to be, I'd imagine, the way someone who was Welsh sees the job. I think maybe the idea of let's have a Welshman isn't a sort of flag-waving for its own sake sort of thing, like when England fail under Capello or something like that, and then that's the sort of knee-jerk reaction, or it should be an English coach. Appreciating in a smaller country like ours the way we've built that way of doing things. Not just gigs. I mean, gigs is Welsh, but if you bring people in from the outside, are they so interested in that? I don't know.
And if the can they do it on a wet Tuesday in Llanrwst sort of version of can you do it on a wet Tuesday in Scunthorpe or something, or Grimsby?
Stoke, wasn't it?
Stoke, yeah.
Pulis's Stoke, yeah, to be more accurate.
If you take that as a sort of yardstick, actually, you can see Austin Roberts doing that all day long.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, you can probably get the impression that he was one of the instigators of that entire idea as well, and really kind of pushed that along. So, and has done his own versions of that as well. I think he might even have accompanied Coleman on one or two of them. So yeah, I can imagine if you talk about those sorts of more domestic criteria, then Roberts does get increasingly more a credible option. Mm-hmm. My nagging doubt is then you've just got to replace. You've got to make two really important appointments then, not just one. But like you say, Carl Darlington would know that system inside out and the structure, so that would reassure me.
There's an air then that maybe going forward, do we become the kind of setup and system that puts succession in place? You know, if Austin was to become manager, and we put Carl Darlington or whoever in charge of the technical director, or do we also then appoint into Austin Roberts' coaching team someone like Bellamy, a future possible manager to kind of carry on from him, or any other name that you care to pick out? Effectively, what would happen if Austin Roberts got the job? He'd be following on in much more of a linear way than if he recruit Pulis or Giggs or someone.
The other dark horse, of course, is Carl Robinson.
Yeah.
He was over in Canada in the MLS, doing well. Not particularly attacking style of play by all accounts, but I'm not hugely into the MLS, I'll confess. I've just sort of heard that a couple of times on social media.
I like the idea of Carl Robinson, but mostly because I know nothing about American football, so I can allow myself to believe that he's learned a huge amount from management experience in that league, and he's this or he's that. I have no idea really what his capabilities are, whether or not we could realistically hope that MLS soccer management would translate into the international game. But he's an interesting thought. It is management experience.
Yeah, and I'm kind of interested in how he got the job in the first place, because lots of big players go over there.
Yeah.
And you can imagine if they perhaps be a little bit more inclined to do the whole marketable thing and go for someone who's a big name, who's got 120 international caps, has won World Cups and everything else. And Robinson ticks none of those boxes. Yeah. So Robinson obviously impressed somebody and seems to have done a decent job, got into solid kind of playoff contenders.
From what limited kind of information I've bothered to read, and modest kind of resources, and they appear to have overperformed. I mean, they're not big trophy winners or anything, but I don't think they're that kind of club that expects to be. I think they seem to overperform from the short bits I've read, but I don't know. I haven't got enough of a basis to make any fair judgment on Carl Robinson, I don't think.
I think he gets tarnished because people tend to associate him with John Toshack, don't they?
I see the other way. I think if people are going to hammer Ryan Giggs as a potential candidate for his failing to turn out as a player, Carl Robinson was always there through the darkest of times. When he turned up and he played when we had no midfielders, him and Carl Fletcher, they'd be there. If that becomes part of the criteria, which it probably shouldn't be, fair play to him.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good point. Does Carl Robinson take any boxes for you, Leon?
It doesn't excite me as an idea. If he'd had massive success out in Vancouver, that would make him a much more interesting candidate to me. But I mean, he's done, from what I understand, he's done all right, but kind of no better than all right. So it's not much to get excited about there. I mean, fair play, he seems a really nice guy, intelligent guy, done his coaching badges, knows Austin Roberts, obviously, that those boxes get ticked, you know, 50 caps for Wales. So yeah, he ticks a few boxes. It's just I struggle to get excited about him as Wales manager.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. For the sake of objective consistency, though, you just look at him and you think, well, what's the difference between him and Giggs or Bellamy? He's actually got more in terms of experience, but I suspect that part of it is just he wasn't, as a player, the same sort of high-profile star of the team Welsh international that the other two were. You know, if we're going to start drawing up lists of former players with pretty limited experience, I don't think he doesn't seem, to me, any better or worse shout than even a Craig Bellamy, probably better than a Ryan Giggs.
I really, really respect Carl Robinson for going out there and staying out in Canada and making a career for himself in coaching, sort of post-playing. It's brilliant. If he'd won MLS with Vancouver, I'd be really excited about the possibility of him becoming Wales manager, but he hasn't.
If we move the conversation on a little bit, whoever it is, what do we think about the situation they're inheriting? We've been quite positive about the way we've talked sort of about things through most of this conversation, but we haven't qualified for the World Cup. We've now got the two friendlies to presume to learn from. People are always saying we need to play more friendlies because we can experiment, we can learn things from them. What have we learned from those France and Panama games? And does it fill us with optimism that the new manager's inheriting something good?
And I'm still purring about Ampadu. I just thought he was brilliant. It is only Panama, but I don't care. If you can read a game that well at that age against a team that is going to the World Cup and had got, I mean, we said this, didn't they, you know, hundreds of caps. Mm. You know, they can find their way around a football pitch. And we're quite cynical on occasions as well, with the play acting and the dive in and a couple of little cheap shots. And they could barely get near him. He was just dropping into space. And it was the way I went at one point. James Chester goes to take a quick free kick and he put his palm up to him and just went, no, I'm taking this. And it was just, he looked like he's been playing the game for years. And yeah, I thought he was excellent.
How immediately brilliant would you like to see his accession into the sort of first team then? I mean, I presume by the end of this current season, he's not going to be playing first team football at Chelsea, though I know he's had a kind of couple of games on the bench and he's made his debut. Have we had enough of a basis of him to say, do you know what, doesn't matter, stick him in. He plays in there with Alan now. And
he was so mobile, and if I was Joe Ledley, I'd be sweating on my place. I honestly think so. Maybe even Joe Allen. Nah, silly. I just thought he was amazing. Yeah. Really did. And I keep sort of saying it was only Panama, but he looked good when he came on against France as well.
Yeah. That was the only time when he looked even remotely good against France, when those three came on and we had a few minutes of just that kind of buzz of excitement of a few players not prepared to try something. You know, no fear. And I have to say that the only nagging worry for me on the back of those two friendlies is that we can spend a lot of time focusing on the very real positives of Ampadu and Brooks and Woodburn, and that does bode really, really well. But that France game for me, if we talk about having friendlies to learn something, well, what I learned from the France friendly, which I suspect already, is that we've gone quite dramatically backwards since the Euros. We were completely out of our depth against a top team in a way that I would have hoped we wouldn't have been. I would have hoped we could have competed and given them a game, and we were really lucky that wasn't an absolute hammering. You know, 2-0 really flattered us.
That's the best side we've played in a long time.
Yeah, it is.
And I suppose if somebody could have done something with the raw materials that Belgium have got, and Wilmots clearly couldn't, then there's every chance that, you know, Belgium were the sort of same sort of calibre.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think they are. I think France are even better. You look at the players that weren't available.
That's a France team that have laboured past Sweden and Bulgaria in qualification. They're a team who are quite capable of struggling when teams have a plan about how they want to play against them. And on the one hand, I could say that suggests to me that we kind of lack now much more the ability to think of ways to take these teams on. Or I could see it the other way and just say, well, it just shows that we were right to never play friendlies. They're meaningless. They don't show you anything. You know, and players don't want to get injured and they're not that bothered about it. I don't know.
I didn't actually see the game. I listened on the radio. I mean, it just sounded like total France domination and purring about the French players all game, really, until Brooks and Ampadu and Woodburn came on, and there was then some actual excitement about the way Wales played. But I saw the team sheet, and I kind of got it because, you know, we're going to Paris to play against a really good French side, but it just seemed a bit unimaginative to play five in midfield, Vokes on his own up front, all the kind of most experienced players available, sort of thing. And I get it, but it just didn't seem very adventurous. Obviously, you don't want to chuck in these kids and have them get hammered 5 or 6-0, which I guess could have happened. But I suppose I was hoping to see involvement of the team from the start, and then we saw it once Brooks and Woodburn and Ampadu came on, and then those kids took it on in the next game against Panama, and you know, showed that they're ready to play international football. So that's really, really promising. And I think, to go back to the point about Ampadu and how much he's going to play for Chelsea, maybe it's perhaps at a stage now again where it might be that we should be picking players to play for Wales who we know are good enough because we've seen it for Wales, or maybe for under 21 level, and not necessarily we've seen it for their clubs, because it used to happen all the time. You know, Toshack basically trusted Brian Flynn when he was kind of looking for new players to bring into the squad, and Flynn would say, okay, well, this, you know, Bale's ready. And Toshak would be like, what? He's 16, he's played 2 substitute appearances for Southampton or whatever it was at that point. But Flynn was like, well, he's good enough, you know, he's going to make it. Why not just chuck him in now and give him experience? So yeah, maybe we're at a point again where, and we've got a year until competitive games, or nearly a year, just put him in, give him experience.
I think there's something in that. If we can see that these guys are exceptionally talented, then yeah, put him in. I mean, Ampadu doesn't look out of place at all, and Bale wouldn't have had that age, because we could see then that he was going to be an exceptionally talented player as well. Doesn't necessarily mean that a lot of the young players that Toshack put in were up to it. They clearly weren't, and therefore I would guess it follows that it doesn't necessarily mean that some of the other less talented young players we're bringing in the squad now need to be kind of rushed into the team for experience. What struck me out of the Panama game was, it was good to have that game for reassurance that, yeah, Ampadu and Woodburn and Brooks didn't look out of their depth. But do you know what? I wouldn't have expected them to have looked out of their depth against a weakened Panama team. And therefore, the other argument, which goes, we want them to have experience of big game international football. Well, that wasn't achieved by playing Panama, because they played virtually a second string. We played virtually a second string Welsh team against a weakened Panama team in front of 12,000 people. So any experience they got out of those two games was really their kind of cameos in France. And it leads me to question, did we learn anything from the Panama game? It was nice to kind of see them on the pitch and playing a bit more, but I think that probably was enough. That confirmed it. Now, next time we play a competitive game, they're serious contenders to play a role in those games. It didn't make me think we need to be playing more friendlies. It made me think one or two a year would be more than enough.
We moved the ball really, really well. I thought, you know, again, a lot of really neat sort of interplay and approach play. Yeah, didn't have too many saves to have to make, but I think that's more about the fact that we had Vokes just up on his own up front, and it was easy. It's just too easy to defend against. You know, we did blood Lockyer. He got caught out a little bit for the goal. But kind of both ways, like we were saying before we started. We've been saying that we need to blood a couple of defenders. Well, young defenders, inexperienced defenders, are going to make the odd mistake. That's what they do. So I think the fact that, you know, when he emptied the bench with people like Ryan Hedges coming on, I'm thinking, well, that's just another Lloyd Igrove against Northern Ireland type sort of substitution. I did think we looked much more incisive when we had Bradshaw. Coleman seemed to have an issue against him. Really didn't want to pick him. And in 2 cameos, he's looked dangerous. Whoever comes in, I'm hoping that they continue to see Bradshaw as something different.
Yeah.
If nothing else, you know, he's never going to be a 20-goal season striker in the Premier League or anything like that. But he's just offered something different. There was a couple of little things, but like you say previously, with friendlies, there wasn't a huge amount. And it does kind of remind us why we play so few.
Often come at things unnecessarily pessimistically. What I did think looking at was this management appointment is massive, because sometimes we forget that potential we've got to revert back to pretty disastrous times. What the France game taught me is, if we draw someone big in our next group and get a couple of batterings in our first 2 games, there's nothing to stop us going back to being the sort of team who's out of contention for qualifiers early on and playing in front of small crowds. Okay, I know Panama's never going to be the same draw as a competitive game. Let's not pretend that fan base, other than the hardcore, isn't still pretty fickle.
So it was good preparation for returning to the
there we are. It was preparation for anything. It was preparation for that. And, you know, Ampadu would burn Brooks or not. In fact, I don't want to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Strictly speaking, if we did start on a downward trajectory over the next year, there's nothing to stop Woodburn and Brooks deciding they're not interested anymore in Championship, is there?
Woodburn's
not Woodburn. Brooks and Ampadu, rather. So, yeah, I think the next year is really important. And I shouldn't forget that we have a long and not very proud history sometimes. And we can't assume that the end of the Coleman era is necessarily going to flow into even another round of being there or thereabouts in the qualification mix.
Yeah. Another reason for not wanting Ireland to get to the World Cup. So they can't sort of snatch Ampadu off us. And I don't think Ghana are going either.
No,
so
no.
If he wants to play in the World Cup next year, he's got to decide he's English. But yeah. I'm not sure that's going to happen. I'm pretty certain it won't. I agree with you. I think they're candidates now for match day squads, possibly starting 11. Maybe not all three of them every game by any means. But they're in contention now.
They're exciting players. And what we've talked about is how are we going to move on as an attacking threat? They are the future of that, undoubtedly. I see no point now. I'm cautious most of the time, but I see no point hanging around and persevering with players who haven't done it this time.
Should we leave it there? A quick plug then for the chapter on the 9th in the evening, Swansea City Club Shop. Is it midday on the 12th?
Midday on the 9th, yeah.
Going to be there.
It's Swansea City, yeah.
And Bramford will be at the Swansea one, not at Cardiff, with Ellis James.
That's a Tuesday the 5th of December in the London Welsh Centre, King's Cross.
What's the kick-off time for that?
I think 7:30.
Well, listen, best luck with that one anyway. I'll see you. Good to catch up when you're in Wales. It deserves to be a success. I know how much hard work and effort has gone into it. And I sense there's an interest in his story because it hasn't really been told. And best luck for Ashley as well with what he's doing. Ashley Drake is the publisher of St. David's. He's probably burning the candle at both ends trying to get this sorted out. He's got a couple of books out, isn't he? Dave Edwards.
Yeah.
There was the Alan Hudson one, which I'm quite interested in actually because he's one of those archetypal kind of characters of the game in the 70s. Then we'll probably try and do something, probably not the whole evening, but part of that evening at Chapter, we'll try and do something sort of live via Periscope or something along those lines as well. So give some careful thought to your tops. Okay? Yeah? Now compulsory fashion segment.
Absolutely. Do you think we would be neglecting our responsibility if we didn't finish by each of us offering a name, a choice for the Welsh manager's job?
Is that who you want or who do you think will get it?
No, who you want.
Oh, who you want?
Something, a stick to beat us with in 6 months' time when anyone listens back.
Well, nobody mentioned Mike Flynn at Newport. He's doing really well. Is that too much of a bolter?
Is that your choice?
No. I've warmed to him and I'm going to stick to that, although I have been really quite tempted by Oshin Roberts this evening. I'm going to stick with Bellamy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leon?
Brian Flynn.
Sorry to be... give it to Brian Flynn. The same, really. I like the idea of Oshin Roberts, but just about favour Bellamy above him.
I'm going to go Oshin Roberts then, just to be different. Marginally above Bellamy, they're the two for me.
I thought you were going to throw your own hat in the ring then.
Well,
off the basis of how well you arrange weekly five-a-side.
I've had some very, very successful games of Football Manager in the past, although I haven't done that for a few years now. So
I've got one cap for the supporters team, so if you need a bit of international experience in the setup.
Yeah, there's a whole coaching team there, really, we could put in place.
Yeah.
There's going to be some kind of left field candidates, and there's got to be. It'd be really boring if there wasn't.
And Rich would have to be our motivational guru.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was tempted to say stranger things have happened. I don't think they have, but then we did give Bobby Gould a job. So,
yeah.
I mean, that is the worry, that we have made an absolute horlicks of this appointment process in the past. I still think it's within us to do so again.
Yeah.
But so far, so good, to be fair to them. So see you in a couple of weeks, Leon. And I'll bring a couple of biros in case one runs out while I'm doing those books.
Yeah, that'd be great. Come prepared.
I'll edit all that out. Brilliant. Cheers, gents.